From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. As we go to air Wednesday morning, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker is signing legislation that aims to outlaw so-called ghost guns. That's a phrase for firearms assembled from buy-build-shoot kits, 3D-printed parts, or other unregulated parts that are readily available online. The kits make gun-making accessible to a wide range of people without the usual background check or required Illinois firearm owner's identification card. The Illinois ban is said to be the first in the Midwest. Here's Governor Pritzker from less than an hour ago.
A child should not be able to build an AR-15 like they're building a toy truck.
Right.
A convicted domestic abuser should not be able to evade scrutiny by using a 3D printer to make a gun. This law will ban those ghost guns and others and will help keep families and communities safe.
We recently had a conversation on the legislation and the perceived threats posed by ghost guns and thought this was a good opportunity to revisit it. I spoke with Daniel Webster, who co-directs the Johns Hopkins Center for Gun Violence Solutions, and Delphine Cherry, board co-chair of the Illinois chapter of the Brady Campaign, who lost not one but two children to gun violence. Because this is on tape, we're not taking calls, but you can always let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org. Okay, I began by asking Delphine Cherry about the rise in shooting violence across Illinois and the role ghost guns might be playing in that.
Well, I mean, if you can't get a gun illegally, so what you gonna do? You're gonna go and mail order your gun. They've been out since around January of 2016. I think we just caught on to ghost guns. I'm going to the gun dealership, and you can purchase them at gun dealerships, but I'm more concerned about the manufacturer that's making them, sending them to people without a background check. It goes against every law that we tried to pass. If you can go out and get a ghost gun and you don't have to have a background check, you consensus to everything that we work for, that the American people have worked for with the gun laws.
Mm-hmm. Daniel Webster, let me ask you, can you just talk a little bit about, maybe say more than I did in the intro about, you know, what exactly is a ghost gun and how did these come to be? What are the advances in technology maybe that made these possible?
Sure. So really what ghost guns are privately made firearms, and there are multiple ways one can make a firearm. Hobbyists have been doing this for a long time, but really the things that have changed more recently that make this a bigger public safety concern or threat is sort of two threats. One, the most important, which is, I think you alluded to this, is these kits that you can buy and assemble with not a lot of trouble, with a few tools and instructions. And you can get this on the internet. And as Delphine said, you don't have to pass a background check. There's no record keeping that would connect you to that gun. It completely undermines the whole, our general way that we think about regulating firearms to protect the public. The other manner in which ghost guns are made is through 3D printing. I think that's a little less common than the kits, but what people should understand is, even though, two things. One is the rate of increase is exponential. We've sort of thought about epidemics like COVID and how quickly cases can go up, and you know how this sort of exponential increase, the same thing is going on with ghost guns. And while they still represent a relatively small percentage of guns recovered in crime, we can't just think about today. The things that we do now to address this problem of ghost guns will be relevant to public safety for a decade or more down the road. So when we think about what's the logical thing to do about this problem, We're thinking not just about today, we're thinking about the years ahead, because guns obviously have a very long shelf life. They can be used for decades.
Sure. And just to be clear then, so what distinguishes a ghost gun as opposed to a serialized or, a firearm that would have a serial number and would be bought through the usual means with a background check and that sort of thing? In your view, what is the distinguishing feature that makes it more dangerous or a unique concern right now?
Well, it's not unique in terms of its functionality. That's the point. That's why the whole point of what's going on with the Biden administration's new rule and the state law that I hope the governor will sign in Illinois, and what's been going on in state legislatures around the country, is we need to treat privately made firearms, and particularly the ones that are mass produced as opposed to a small volume made by hobbyists. We need to treat them like all other firearms. And what is concerning is a lot of the focus is on that there's no serial number, which is important. But honestly, the most important thing is that it's the complete end around the system developed to keep guns from people who the law determines is too dangerous to have them. That's why this is a concern and why it is very logical and, frankly, not particularly controversial to take action.
Sure. Well, I want to come back to that point of whether it's controversial and get your response to what some of the gun rights activists are saying to this. But let's talk about that Illinois legislation in particular. And Delphine Cherry with the Brady campaign, can you talk about what the organizing in support of that legislation looked like from your perspective?
What it looks like, I think it looks great. I wanted to first say I've lost two kids to gun violence, my oldest and my youngest. Matter of fact, her birthday is today. Brady started working on this ghost gun a couple of years ago. I thought it was fantastic because there has been 455 ghost guns recovered in Chicago alone last year, and up to 139 so far this year. So I think they have always been out there. We just didn't recognize it. It's something that needed to happen, and I'm glad that it did happen, and I hope that the governor do sign the bill. The bill is not exactly what we want, but if we can get them illegal, then that's a step in the right direction. My thing is, if you cannot get a gun legally, you don't meet one illegally.
Sure.
And they're out here. They're out here. They're everyone. I was talking to a friend and he's like, "Oh, y'all late. We've been knowing about ghost guns." I ordered my kid. I'm like, "Wow, so you have a felony, you got a gun."
Yeah.
So I with the legislation, I thought it was great. Jacqueline Collins worked on the bill. It got passed about 4:43 that morning. I stayed up all night waiting on that bill to get passed. So every time a bill come up, especially when it concerns guns, I'm on board. And this bill was very important to me. After passing the bill we did in 2017, and that was the background checks and a couple of other bills, the restraining order bill, which I think we have the bills, but people are not using the bills. You know what I mean? They're not, like with the bill for the restraining order. If you know that a person is mentally incapable of having a gun, then why do they have a gun? And it's not that we're taking your gun away from you. We're taking it until you get better, so you won't harm yourself or somebody else. That's where the suicide, the domestic violence come in. And ghost guns are using all of those, school shootings, domestic violence, all that.
You know, I have to say, I'm sorry, I did not realize this was the birthday of one of your children.
Right, I mean, it's so personal. It's sure. Always been personal.
Yeah, yeah.
My daughter was 16 when she was murdered coming out of a theater by a 14-year-old that was given a gun by an adult. He was shooting at another person. The bullet hit the building, ricocheted, hit her in the head, killing her instantly. I was pregnant with my son 20 years later. He go to work, come home. He gets ready to go to a party. He's shot in front of my house in my driveway. That case is still unsolved. So I'm a little angry with all these guns that's out here. And I remember going to Indiana to a gun show to see how easy it was to buy a gun. And I was able to purchase 3 guns, no background check, no. And I'm like, wow, this is crazy. Yeah. And I joined Brady in 2014, and I've been with them ever since.
Well, I'm sorry for your losses, and thank you for sharing that story. Daniel, that does raise a point, though, about going to Indiana, going to the suburbs. There have been reports. You co-authored a report in 2019 that analyzed Illinois firearm policies and evidence of their effects. There have been other actually, I can't remember if it was that report or another report that talked about how so many of the actually recovered crime guns in Chicago, at least, come from just a small number of gun shops outside of that area. Maybe you can talk about the Illinois legislation that is the subject of where we started today, this on these privately made firearms, and what you think of that, and you know whether it goes as far as activists want it.
Sure. So, look, the legislation, the ghost gun legislation in Illinois is very similar to legislation that just passed and a Republican governor signed into law in Maryland, and similar to other states as well, that, as I was saying, really, frankly, is not particularly controversial or shouldn't be, because what we're talking about is firearms and the very basics that a privately made firearm is just as lethal, and therefore the same sort of regulation should apply in order to keep those firearms out of the hands of individuals for whom the state has determined are too dangerous to have them. So it's a critical piece. Illinois has an array of laws that have similar objectives or goals. They're all pretty much aligned in the same way. And when you're talking about guns in the gun marketplace, yeah, it's complex. So you have to have a process that of accountability for those who sell guns, those who acquire guns, so that they don't end up in the wrong hands. We know that Chicago's in particular is harmed by the weak laws in neighboring Indiana, as well as some other states as well. I've spent much of my 30-year career studying gun violence, and including state gun laws. And the general takeaway from that research is that the gun trafficking data that we're able to look at in connection to, for example, crime gun traces, show very clearly that states with weak laws like Indiana harm other states with stronger laws. That's as clear as can be in the data. However, at least the states that have fairly strong measures, we still see beneficial effects, because there is a cost associated with gun trafficking, basically. And if you go to Indiana, you're risking the potential of federal violations as well as state violations. And we've done surveys of people active in underground gun markets, and they act like other consumers. You know, they care about price, they care about risk. And they respond accordingly. So if the laws and law enforcement practices elevate the cost and risk of acquiring a firearm, fewer of those are acquired in the sort of dangerous underground market context.
All right, we need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue revisiting my conversation with Daniel Webster, who co-directs the Johns Hopkins Center for Gun Violence Solutions, and Delphine Cherry, board co-chair of the Illinois chapter of the Brady Campaign. We're revisiting this conversation today because just this morning, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker signed legislation that aimed to outlaw so-called ghost guns here in Illinois, the first state in the Midwest, it's said to be, to do that. Because this is on tape, we're not taking calls, but you can always let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org, talk@21stshow.org. You can always find that address, plus every other way to contact us, our voicemail line, Twitter, Facebook, everything else. It's all on our website, 21stshow.org. And while you're there, you can also sign up for our podcast so you never miss a segment or a conversation here on the show. More to come after a short break. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. This morning, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker was at a gymnasium at St. Sabina's Church in Chicago, signing legislation aimed at banning so-called ghost guns here in Illinois. These are firearms made from buy-build-shoot kits. It could be 3D-printed parts, basically other unregulated parts readily available online that make gun-making accessible to a wide range of people and without the usual background checks or required Illinois FOID or firearm owner's identification card. We spoke about this recently with Daniel Webster of the Johns Hopkins Center for Gun Violence Solutions and Delphine Cherry, board co-chair of the Illinois chapter of the Brady Campaign. We thought because the governor was signing the legislation this morning, we thought it would be a good opportunity to revisit that conversation. Gun rights activists do oppose this. There's legislation that passed in Illinois looking to ban this and requiring serialization, serial numbers be added to these privately made firearms. The gun rights activists argue it infringes on Second Amendment rights and presents unnecessary regulatory hurdles. Richard Pearson of the Illinois State Rifle Association published a notice on that group's website saying that their legal team is reviewing it. If we can do anything about this legislation in the courts, we will. He also said, in his opinion, it's not about unserialized firearms, nor is it about keeping them out of the hands of criminals. Quote, I know the anti-gun crowd and many of their fellow travelers in the media think this is their purpose, but this and other anti-gun bills are aimed at you and me. Does anyone actually think a criminal is going to take an unserialized gun to have it serialized and registered to their name? Criminals file off serial numbers from guns. They don't put them on. End quote. I also want to go now to the phones at 800-222-9455. Jacob is calling from Bloomington. Jacob, thank you for calling in.
Hi, thank you. So I think there's a lot more nuance to this issue than is really getting talked about. And one of the really important things that I think gets left out of the conversation is like the technical and technological underpinning that the simple fact is that guns are really relatively simple machines. I mean, even modern firearms a lot of times only have a handful of moving parts and they're not hard to make. That's part of why the kits are as popular as they are, is because you can get a hunk of metal and a drill, couple of drill bits and a jig, and you can mill out the part yourself in your garage. And it seems to me like it's an uphill battle to try to fight against some of that, because like when I think about an unserialized firearm, a lot of time I think about a muzzle-loading smoothbore musket that was made back before they put serial numbers on them. And that's nothing more than basically a tube that's open on one end. You jam some gunpowder in it, and you have a firearm. So
it's like a Revolutionary War, Civil War type firearm you're talking about.
Oh, Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And there's a long history of tinkerers and researchers and developers developing prototypes in their garage because it's not hard to do. So if we're focused on this technology that's been around for hundreds of years, that's really well understood and not focused on the distinction between who's got it, right? It's we have a firearm, but we have maybe one person's a prohibited possessor and the other person already owns 10 guns and he wants to try his hand on making one. Like preventing that guy from milling out a piece of steel isn't really making anyone any safer. And
well, this is the disconnect, right? Because you don't see a lot of smoothbore muskets, recovered in crime example. Yeah.
But it's on the larger scale. I mean, the technology hasn't changed in like a century, right? Sure. It's not that new and it's not that hard to accomplish even with a modern design. I just use that as an example. And
yeah,
like,
sure.
If we go up the manufacturing chain, we're talking about banning these kits that sell a piece of metal and some tools. Well, then, okay, what if you acquire them separately? Like, are we going to go to the point of saying, well, you can't own these, you know, a Dremel tool and also acquire raw aluminum because you might make it into a gun? You know,
all right, Jacob. Well, let me ask our guest
like
to respond.
Focusing on the wrong thing.
Sure. Well, thank you for sharing your perspective, Jacob. Appreciate the call. Daniel, would you like to respond to anything the caller said?
Yes, I'd love to respond to that. So, yeah, the caller's right. The technology is not particularly complex. And yes, this has been people have made firearms for centuries. However, it hasn't been centuries in which we've had an exponential increase in the number of guns, unserialized guns that are showing up in the hands of criminals and crime scenes. The reason that is the case is that the marketplace had been opened up precisely to mass market this to make it particularly easy. Gets to my point I was making earlier, which is, yes, this is a marketplace, and people will make arguments about any type of gun regulation and say, well, there's a way around this, so why do it, right? And criminals, you know, the what you read earlier from one of the gun rights groups saying that, well, criminals won't obey this. Well, that's kind of really illogical thinking. That thinking, if you apply that thinking, why pass any law? Because people will break those laws. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. What this law does in particular is, of course, it's not going to keep all guns out of all hands, but it's going to make it far harder and riskier for risky people to get guns if you address this gap in the law. And yeah, sure, people are going to be able to make firearms. Some people will, but not nearly as many. It will be more costly. And I highly doubt that any hobbyist is going to go to jail because he has a personal firearm. I mean, that individual, it's not hard to get your gun serialized, you know, obey the laws. I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
That's my response.
Delphine, I wondered if you either wanted to respond to the caller or the comment I read from the
well,
go ahead. Sure.
Well, I just want to say, I don't have a problem with people having a hobby as guns. If you know you bought a ghost gun and you want it to be a part of your hobby, why not have it legal? You know what I mean? Why have something illegal that you know is illegal? And even though you hobbyist and you know, my daughter was in the service, I watched her take down guns and put them back together. You know, but that she was in the Army, she had to do that. So like he said with the ghost gun kit, why are you trying or illegally buying a gun and not want us to expose the fact that there are these ghost guns out here killing people?
And Delphine,
you know
what's
what I mean?
Yeah, sure. What's next for you in terms of advocacy and policy change? Where is the Brady campaign looking to go next?
I'm not sure what Brady is considering doing, but I'm thinking about the ghost guns and I'm thinking about the manufacturers of the ghost guns. I mean, they have to have some kind of liability in this.
And Daniel, final thoughts from you about this issue or where you see the you know, the landscape for gun violence prevention efforts going more broadly?
Sure. Well, I think there's two main directions here. One is focus on the supply issues, try to prevent diversions of guns into the hands of people who are too dangerous to have them. Ghost guns is part of that, but better oversight of gun sellers generally. There's a lot of research that I've done and others that says that this is a way to go, and I think that there's lots of opportunities to in that area, and will not violate anybody's Second Amendment rights. Lastly, I'll just say that probably most of the action in gun violence prevention is investment in community violence intervention programs. That's a very exciting thing to see, and something that our center, and me in particular, we are studying carefully.
All right, and those are other conversations we have had on the show and will continue to have in the future. Daniel W. Webster is co-director of the Johns Hopkins Center for Gun Violence Solutions. Delphine Cherry is co-chair of the Illinois chapter of the Brady Campaign. Daniel and Delphine, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.